Hello, and welcome to NextPod, VP NextGen's podcast made for veterinary students and young professionals who want to know what's next. I'm your host, Sarah Sedd, and this month's topic is sustainability and the environment. To speak on the subject, in celebration of National Environmental Education Week, we have a very inspiring guest, Dr. Stephanie Stuba, founder of AniPal. Welcome, Dr. Stuba.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me, Sarah.
No, it's great that you're here. Can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got here, as well as AniPal?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm a vet from Australia. I originally come from rural New South Wales and a cattle property in rural New South Wales. And I was always interested in animals, and I'm actually back at the farm right now. I drove up late last night, but I moved to Melbourne to study and studied science, and then found myself obviously pursuing, I had a bit of a choice between human medicine or veterinary medicine, and my heart was with animals. So definitely pursued the veterinary medicine path. And then while I was doing my placements in vet school, as well as pretty much as soon as I graduated, I was exposed obviously to the veterinary profession. I realized how much plastic we used and how we weren't aware of how much plastic we were using. And then that really sent me into a rabbit hole of researching alternatives for the veterinary profession. And then that led to AniPal as well. So I'm currently working clinically as a veterinary profession, as well as running a social enterprise on the side. So that's a bit of background about me.
Awesome. So what exactly is AniPal for people who are listening? Like, what's the mission that you have with that?
Absolutely. So our mission is to help transition the veterinary industry to more sustainable practices. So it actually, funnily enough, all started when I mentioned, when I was exposed to all the plastic we were using. But in particular, there was a moment when I was popping the lead onto my dog and taking him for a walk, and I just read a whole lot of articles about what was happening in our oceans. And I grew up on the Murray River here in Australia, which is the largest river we have here in Australia. It actually goes through our property, and I was exposed to a lot of rubbish that comes down it sometimes, and especially when we have floods, and then you end up with rubbish through the paddocks as well. And it was always at the front of my mind, what's happening in our rivers, what's happening in our oceans. And then I was putting my lead on my dog, and I had this moment of, oh my gosh, what is this lead and leash made out of? And then I remember distinctly, my dog was so excited to go for a walk. And I was like, I'm so sorry, Billy, just hold on 2 seconds. I really need to go and research what these products are made from. And then I discovered that these products, they feel like natural fibers. So I assumed that my leash and collar for my dog was made from a sustainable fiber, and it felt natural, but it's actually polyester, which is plastic that's cut into pellets, and then they spin the plastic into yarn, and then that yarn is called polyester, and that's really what makes a lot of our clothes and what makes 99% of dog collars and leashes and coats and products that we all touch and feel every single day, and we don't really think about it, and because it feels like it's natural, but yeah, it's actually what's called virgin plastic. So plastic that's made from oil in the ground, really. Yeah. So it's AniPal, we're trying to make either recycled alternatives for the vet industry. So alternatives made from recycled plastic. So we don't need to make new plastic. We can recycle plastic that's already been used. Or we're looking at also making products that have the same strength, durability, functionality, but made from natural fibers. But a piece that I did discover is that in order to provide these products for the vet industry, we need to educate, just like what I did when I Googled and researched a lot, we need to educate our profession about this so then we can actually make the right decisions.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, because I mean, so like nowadays, there's so much talk about climate change and just the environment and how to kind of take care of the planet. There's even like really young people like Greta Thunberg, who has been speaking out internationally. And it's interesting that you're saying educate, because we've heard about it a lot, but it's hard to really know exactly how to go about it. What are the steps? What can we take? How can we take action that every single day makes a difference on the long run? And I think that's great, because it's like really specific to the vet industry, especially for vet students on NextGen, to know like what kind of difference can they make, you know, every single day. So like, that's a good question actually. So what would you recommend for a vet student in particular who wants to make a difference with the environment? What kind of steps can they take, like small things every day to start off with that? Yeah.
Definitely. So what's been really fantastic to see is that in the last 6 months to a year, there's actually been a really fantastic increasing groundswell of vets internationally wanting to understand this space and help drive it forward in our profession. So I definitely, and we are honestly always looking for students, because and students to help grow this movement, because and as you hear everywhere, students are, and younger people are, the future of our generation, and they are also so unique and special in regards to having such incredible enthusiasm. And that's where AniPal started. It was right at the beginning of my career, and when you do have incredible enthusiasm at that point. And that is a unique skill that I think students can really provide. So I definitely recommend that they reach out and connect with, they can reach out and connect with AniPal and myself for starters. They can reach out and definitely connect with Vet Sustain, which is a group that we're in touch with and work closely with, based in the UK, but they're trying to mobilize vets internationally, and they're providing kind of the blueprint for vets and information on how they can behave and more sustainably, and also what kind of actions they can enact in their clinic. The other group is Vets for Climate Action, which exists here in Australia. I'm not quite on top of what's happening in North America, but as we are wanting to be an international collective group of vets, the best thing is that we all work together. So ideally, we all share resources, which is what's happening at the moment. So I definitely recommend anyone and any students to reach out to us, and we can help you also create a group that in your university it's helping educate each other about what you can do in the clinic, what you can ask. Sorry, I'm about to sneeze. What you can ask to clinic owners, and honestly, definitely, if you're interested in the space, there would be special interest groups in your area. So, for example, the American Veterinary Medical Association, and I can imagine Canada would have similar bodies working on conservation, special interest groups working on conservation and environmental initiatives. Definitely reach out and connect with them. So there's a lot we can do in the clinic, even if it's from the little things, from making sure we have the right bins in place for the recycling bins, for example, and trialing different places to put the bins. And so if these students are going to clinics to spend time at the clinics and doing their work placements, I definitely recommend they can say to clinic owners, hey, you know, I've done a bit of research on this space. Do you want me to help out with this? I can trial a few places to put different bins and see if that increases the amount that rubbish is getting streamlined properly. So definitely you can reach out to us and we can provide you with the tools of doing a bin audit. And then at the end of your placement, you can show them, oh, hey, look, I've actually been able to help you enact better recycling and waste disposal in your clinic. And instead of needing to buy your clinic or cook them something yet nice to say, oh, thank you very much for having me for a work placement, you can actually really help them in a way that normally they don't have time to really enact themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's an option.
No, that's great. That's awesome. And you actually mentioned that you said the last 6 months to a year, you've seen a change. One of my questions to you was actually going to be, you know, what's your opinion on the current state in regards to the sustainability within the veterinary industry? But since you mentioned that, I was just wondering, like, why do you think that there has been a change from before? Is it a drastic change that you've seen recently? Like, what do you think is starting that?
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic to see. And I think it's come at a time where we scientifically understand the challenges that we have faced environmentally. And because as vets, we are trained scientists and we are actually in a very unique position where we can act as influencers, not only because we're in touch with, obviously, and interact with humans on our clinical level, but we also interact with wildlife. We have a knowledge of biodiversity. We're working with production animals in agriculture. We actually have such unique touch points, and we also work in government and policy. And as a profession, we have incredible links to such a diverse and influential area. And with the knowledge of the environmental challenges we are facing, I think fortunately there's been a number of vets, both in the UK, Australia, and I'm beginning to see in the US and North America, that are realizing this, and we're looking around at each other and we're all beginning to connect and be like, wow, we can actually really act as agents of change in this space. And we have a very unique voice. And fortunately, as a profession, we are actually one of the most trusted professions that the public listen to. Mm-hmm. So it really gives us a very unique power to be able to drive forward the changes that we want to see. So yes, in the last 6 months to a year, with vets like Laura in the UK, Laura Hingham, who from Vet Sustain, and then there's Vets for Climate Action, and who I work closely with in Australia, and actually Australian Veterinary Medical Association has just announced, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that the International Veterinary Day is going to be focused entirely on the day we celebrate vets internationally, is going to be focused entirely on environmental sustainability and how we as a profession internationally can drive this forward. So it'll be celebrating that, which is really exciting, and just goes to demonstrate how internationally we understand that we can together really create change.
That's awesome. I love that they made that day special for the environment. Because it's like every country has their own climate, different kinds of climate, and you're in Australia, which is obviously very hot compared to lots of other places in the United States or even like in England. Do you find that there's kind of different tools, products, different strategies that you need to implement in regards to being more sustainable compared to other climates?
Yeah, that's actually it's a really good question. And it's actually very, very insightful that we are actually, regardless of the different climates that we have very similar setups in our clinics using very similar tools and resources. So if we're going to start in the clinic with choosing more sustainable alternatives and thinking twice about what energy suppliers we use, what we do with our waste, what we do with our single-use gowns, maybe if we replace some of them with reusable gowns, a whole variety of things. It's actually all very, very similar.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's actually a friend of mine who has developed a entire clinic sustainability platform for, well, it's a program for clinics. She's just recently finished it and is piloting it in a couple of clinics here in Australia. There's similarly in the UK, Davis Veterinary Specialist Centre with Ellie, she's an anaesthetist and has been pushing this forward over there. She's working with a group called Investors in the Environment, who certify clinics who are able to enact certain sustainability protocols in their clinics. The programs that we are all implementing are very similar, because we all actually run our clinics in very similar ways. But in regards to overall policies that we're trying to drive forward in governments, again, oddly enough, they're normally quite similar. So it's got to do with, firstly, unfortunately, in Australia, we're a little bit further behind than what's happening in the UK, with their government already declaring a climate emergency. So allocating funds to helping implement changes. In Australia, we haven't reached that point yet. In the United States, similarly, there's not all that much action there. I don't know actually what's happening in Canada with Trudeau. Do you know what's happening in that space? I do need to follow up there.
I haven't dug too much into it, but I feel like it definitely is more talked about just in general amongst like younger people.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's definitely hard to, it's hard to keep on top of everything as well, because honestly, government really does have to drive so many things forward. But there is again, this increasing urgency to push governments to act. And specifically, obviously in Australia, we've been recently challenged with the bushfires, which has definitely put our government under the spotlight, but also coronavirus in itself is quite linked to climate change, which, because the changing in climate, we are going to see more zoonotic cases of disease, which is when disease transmits from animals and normally a wildlife reservoir to humans. And then, as we've seen with coronavirus, it can mutate, so it has a human-to-human transmission. And this actually is all under the umbrella of what we do expect with climate change. So I do think that we're going to see the changes in the clinic are all very similar internationally. Changes in government, again, are all quite similar. Yes, we might have unique challenges, but they're all kind of, we need to focus on the same things, really.
Well, it's interesting that you're saying how coronavirus is kind of is connected to the environment, because essentially, if you think about it, it's the planet's health that we're worrying about, and health is health regardless. So of course the planet's health is going to affect people. Of course it's going to affect animals. And I feel like, you know, often there's maybe a disconnect in our minds when it comes to that, because, you know, we don't, like, we see an animal, we know it's living and it's, we can hug it and hold it and it moves around and it, you know, but the earth, we just walk on it every day. We don't think about like plants as being living sometimes. if we have an environment that we're not taking care of and we're neglecting, how can that neglect negatively affect wildlife versus domestic pets versus farm animals? Or is it all the same? Do we all have the same kind of results from that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is. It's fascinating. So there's a movement in, fortunately, it's a movement, it's an international movement that connects humans with vets and scientists, and it's called the One Health movement. Mm-hmm. And it It's a UN approach, fortunately, and a World Health Organization based approach. It's a recent approach that they've developed because they've realized exactly what you've said, that we are all inextricably linked and we all are being posed and challenged with unique challenges. So collectively, they've developed this One Health approach, connecting all these different professionals across these different areas to figure out how we can all work together and change what we're doing to tackle exactly what you were alluding to. So, and they are, for the unique areas, we are posed with unique challenges, but which, as I mentioned, are all linked. So for example, and it's fascinating, I actually only read it this week, but so obviously we've known for a long time that our insect species and our bees internationally, globally, are under a lot of threat, and they are regarded as the most important species in the world. There's a lot of important species, but bees and pollinators really underpin a huge amount of agriculture, which that we rely on, and pollination of different crops, which then go on and create feed for humans, create feed for animals. And of course, cropping and agriculture has been affecting soils. But if we go back to bees, for example, advvocate or advantage, which we are examples of, and revolution are examples of pesticide treatments that we use routinely or monthly on our companion animal species in practice. And we've been to date, a lot of vets taught at vet school to recommend doing ongoing parasite treatment. But one advantage or advocate that we pop on our dog's back, for example, there's scientific evidence now demonstrating that it is, a lot of it is distributed throughout the skin, but some of it is also absorbed into the animal and goes out in their urine and feces. And of course, when they go swimming in the river and things like that, it gets flushed into the river. Some of this product, it then ends up in waterways, and then further it goes out into the environment on a larger scale. But one of those simple parasitic treatment has the lethal dose, what's called, essentially it's regarded in pharmaceutical terms of lethal dose 50, of being able to kill 50% of more than 20 million and up to 50 million bees.
Ooh.
Just one of the advocate or advantage products that we use on our animals monthly is able to do that. So of course, as I mentioned, bees are being challenged, and obviously not only through the products we use on our companion animals, but also with pesticide treatment and fungicide treatment that we use agriculturally on a large scale level, they're being challenged. And then of course, production animals, they already have their unique challenges of being pushed to their limits and being fed diets that aren't necessarily normal and natural for them. And then increasingly, agriculture is expanding into wildlife reservoir spaces, which then connects both humans and production animals, puts them in more contact with wildlife species, which carry their own unique enzootic diseases. But for them, it's fine. They're just carriers. But when they come in connection with a species that hasn't seen that before, then they can get that disease, and it causes all sorts of issues with both us as humans if we haven't seen it before, or we have the production animals. So, and that's as a product of our encroachment into their area, and also that's driving things like coronavirus. And then that also affects humans. And so, and also we're having with climate change, obviously more floods and more drought. So, and which affects everything. It affects wildlife, obviously with the bushfires. It affects us because even here at home, I was here because we were on watch and alert for fires. The fires were very close to us. And a lot of my friends, some of my friends' properties actually got burnt out entirely. Yeah, so we were very under threat there. So it's some unique challenges, but again, sometimes there's huge, enormous threats that affect all of them, from production animals to humans to wildlife. Sometimes some threats affect us all. So yeah, it is kind of worrying, but the good thing is we can focus on what we can change and what we as vets can help do to create that change. And there is still time. Sometimes you get this feeling and this message that it's doomsday already and we've gone too far, but that's not right. And as humans, we have an incredible capacity to problem solve, to create change, and really we can find solutions. And that's what vets are really good at doing in particular. Yeah.
100%. And also, like, you know, if all of the next generation, it really kind of comes together even globally and is fighting towards making the earth better, then 100% there will be positive results. It's like definitely the solidarity in that problem can create solutions. That's awesome.
Absolutely. And do you know, funnily enough, what I see as happening and what I really hope happens is that you can see in Amsterdam, for example, and a number of the Scandinavian countries, at their bus stops, some of their bus stops, they have put in like grass on top of their bus stops where there's a bit of a shelter base. And then they've also put in beehives on top bus stops all around their city. And this is happening rurally as well, which is great because then there's bees to pollinate the agriculture and the flowers and everything rurally. So vets can act as really leaders in this space, and with their practices they can really act as nexuses of change and show the public what you can do. So what I really hope is one day we're going to see practices with vertical garden roofs and beehives up there, and then maybe while customers are waiting, they can go through the vertical garden upstairs. They can see beehives. They can see a bit of a veggie garden where we're harvesting, you know, food and fruits for animals. I hope that there's, for example, in Australia, we're really trying to foster clinics to have native species. So for the pollinators and for wildlife, they can find homes in these areas. I'm hoping to see solar panels on vet clinics. And, you know, we can have flyers in our practices or out in our gardens explaining to clients as they're waiting what this solar power does and how we use it. I'm hoping to see in clinics, you know, different recycling bins and a bit of a education pamphlet for people on where this waste goes. And honestly, there's so much we can do and what we can use our clinics and our brick and mortar places for, and demonstrate to our clients and educate them on what we're doing to help create the change. And I really think with the future generation, we're going to see a lot of this, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, no, definitely. That all sounds awesome. And then the greatest thing too is that now, because of social media and technology, it's so easy to get inspired and get ideas, and hopefully like people can interconnect and talk and help each other find more and more solutions, and that could just grow from there. And it's kind of what you were saying before, just educate. That's the main thing that will make a change, I think.
Absolutely. Educate and show each other what we can do, share resources. So it's been really fantastic. We've been in very close connection with Vet Sustain in the UK, and we are all sharing resources on how we can create change in our clinics and in our profession overall. And definitely I recommend for students to reach out to us, and we can work out how to connect students in with this and conduct education sessions at their universities as well on how to implement sustainability in our profession. So fortunately, Vet Sustain have had lots of meetings with the Royal College of Veterinary Science in London and a number of their veterinary programs over there on how to bring sustainability into the veterinary university course. So they have it part of the curriculum. In Australia, we're a little bit behind, but we're obviously trying to push that a lot. Where it's just our vet programs have gone through a lot of change, so we're still trying to work to incorporate sustainability, and the same in the US and Canada and North America. There's a lot of scope for us, and I think we will see in the next 5 years there be a mandatory incorporation of sustainability in our vet programs at university, which is really exciting.
Yeah, 100%. Also, I looked at your website a little bit, and on your website you mentioned that to work effectively with animals, it requires both proactive action as well as reactive treatment. So I was just wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about this. I found it very interesting.
So fortunately, as vets, we are taught how to problem solve on a large scale. And the good thing, the amazing thing is that we're taught that we can create change in the clinic, and we can react to and treat patients who are unwell, and that's called fire engine medicine. So when there is a problem, it's essentially you treat that problem, or you use an extinguisher and a big hose to to stop the fire and treat the problem. However, it's more effective to actually prevent the problem in the first place. So a lot of curriculum at vet school focuses on prevention and the power of prevention over treatment and reactive treatment. So it's the same as what we see here in Australia, is that we see a lot of heat stress in companion animals. Wildlife, for example, we're brought in, you know, lots of cases of wildlife hit by cars, wildlife that are challenged and emaciated because there's not enough food, wildlife that are encroaching on human civilization seeking shelter and food, wildlife that, you know, end up with plastic ingestion, plastic around their beaks, plastic caught up in plastic and on all sorts of different ways. So all of this can really be prevented, firstly, if we change when we can show this change, what we use in the clinic. So we're using less virgin plastic products, more reusable products or recycled products, and more products made from natural fibers that can naturally break down or be composted. And so they don't actually end up as waste in our environment to cause these challenges and cause these morbidities that we are then presented with in the clinic. So it's about prevention in the clinic. So hopefully we can reduce the incidence of cases that we're brought in.
My other question for you was, so, I mean, I was mentioning, I think I mentioned her earlier. So Greta Thunberg, she's the 17-year-old environmentalist that is like, you know, or activist, sorry, that everybody's talking about nowadays. And she's really just kind of showing that young people can make a change. And she once said that we can't save the world by playing by the rules because the rules have to be changed. So I just wanted to know, like, what are your thoughts on this, in particular when it comes to the veterinary industry and sustainability? What are some rules that you think we have to maybe throw out the window or change in some way in order to really progress?
Yes. So Greta has demonstrated that collectively our youth have such a powerful voice. Mm-hmm. And they are essentially a section of our community which hasn't necessarily previously combined all that often to create such an influential change, but they're clearly demonstrating that they have an enormous voice and they're ready to use this, and they are using this because they're fighting for what they believe in. And that is a really powerful thing. When you connect with someone emotionally, they will never give up. And it is until they've created the change that they want to see, which is so special and something that the world is harnessing, and they're helping create this change. Fortunately, in the vet industry, we are scientists, and so and there are a lot of rules that we are discovering, and we're able to use science to validate that we're discovering that can be challenged and changed. For example, how I mentioned in regards to necessarily using blanket parasitic treatment monthly, we're beginning to realize, hey, in areas where there aren't actually that many parasites or parasites that are causing really worrying changes and pose morbidity issues to companion animals like heartworm and paralysis tick, if we're in an area where they're very rarely discovered, we don't need to be using monthly preventative parasitic treatment unless the companion animal is showing symptoms of a disease or that the disease is quite common in that area. We can question that, and there's science now validating that we don't need to be doing that, which is fantastic. And that's beginning to really infiltrate the veterinary profession, which, you know, for a time there were these diseases that were endemic and they were everywhere. But fortunately, with our great control and understanding of it, we've been able to reduce the incidence. So now we can even think twice about giving this parasitic treatment. The other thing is, we in the human medical space and the veterinary medical space have associated sterility in the clinic with single-use products. We can go back to the days where we used reusable gowns for a lot of different surgeries, for clean surgeries. So surgeries can be divided into dirty surgeries and clean surgeries. So for clean elective surgeries, we can be using reusable gowns, which can save up to thousands of single-use gowns in a clinic every year, which just go to waste. We can also use drapes, reusable drapes, instead of single-use drapes. And you normally use three to four single-use drapes per surgery. So if you're using reusable drapes, you can save up to tens of thousands of single-use products going to waste each year in your clinic alone. So it's fantastic to see this change, and with a lot of paper study, scientific studies that are happening, we can validate that change. And it's happening in human hospitals and vet hospitals, which is really exciting.
Yeah, that's great. It's really just like a small thing can make such a big difference, ultimately.
Exactly. And it even comes down to antibiotic therapy now, and this is being done and taught in vet schools at the moment, is that instead of blanket treatment of antibiotic therapy and using antibiotic therapy in production animals, we actually only use that when we really need to and when the disease and the symptoms are indicative of infection that can be treated by a very specific antibiotic therapy. So I think treatments are becoming a lot more targeted, and what we do and use in the clinic is beginning to be questioned, but questioned with excitement, because there's alternatives we can use, which is going to save a lot of waste.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Are there any misconceptions that you're finding now that you're implementing all these, you want to be more sustainable? Is there any misconceptions people have when it comes to that they think, oh, it's going to be a big hassle or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, one barrier we are faced with is, as humans, and I'm exactly the same, sometimes we, and scientists as well, we are taught to question change and want to be demonstrated that there is a good scientific case supporting that change. And it takes about 60 days of practicing change for it to actually then form into a habit. And during those 60 days, it can be really hard. It can be really hard because you're not used to it. It's mm-hmm. unfamiliar to you, especially in a vet clinic. You're under pressure, time pressure normally. It can be stressful because you're dealing with sick patients and sometimes bereaving clients. And so it can be really hard during that transition phase. But once you normally get over that 60 days, it becomes normal, it becomes natural. And then, you know, 2 months later, everyone's looking back and being like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we did that for the last 30 years. Whoa. So yes, there are some challenges, but it's normally got to do with us as human, our human instincts and ability to cope with the transition. But if we're supported enough to get through that, and we know the science behind it, and we know why we're doing it, then once we get through that transition phase, it becomes really easy, and we don't think twice.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's just mainly about normalizing these kind of practices every single day to eventually make it normal, normalizing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So do you have a specific story or experience that you can share that really has shaped you in regards to this? That's something that you went through that kind of stuck out to you and wanted you to, and made you want to continue?
Yeah, there's been, fortunately, having grown up with nature around me, and also Canada and the US, you have such incredible natural wonders, and particularly Canada. A lot of my friends actually in vet school that I went through school with, my three closest mates, two are Canadian and one from the US. So one of them is actually in Toronto. She practices in Toronto, and another one is from Vancouver, and the other one is from California. And honestly, the pictures I see of them going to the lakes and going to Yosemite and Yellowstone, and oh my gosh, it's incredible. And it's those moments, I think, as students and as vets, when we really get to connect with nature, mm-hmm. that helps us keep going and keep fighting this fight. But for me in particular, it's when I'm at home here where I grew up, and I get to go for runs, and I just am surrounded by birds, and I'm surrounded by wildlife, and I'm surrounded by the beautiful river. And it's, for me, it's where I get my energy. I'm unfortunately living in the city at the moment in Melbourne, but that's purely for work at the moment and for my partner's work. But I come home here a lot, and to get that reprieve with nature. There was a couple of very unique experiences where I've spent time on horseback up in the Australian Alpine District, so up in the mountains where we go camping. You don't see another soul. It's just you on a horse in nature, surrounded by wildlife. And then I fortunately had the opportunity to do that over in Kenya as well. In Kenya, they've implemented a no plastic bag policy. Wow. Where it's incredible. So we were actually patted down at the airport to make sure we had no plastic bags on us. And if you are seen with plastic bags, you are sent to prison. So they have taken, I know, it's incredible.
Wow.
They've realized how much their natural reserves mean to them as in a country and as an economy. It underpins their agriculture, it underpins their tourism, it underpins a lot of their ability to create a good economy for their people. And they've had to really implement this change to protect their natural reservoirs. And so when we were out on horseback in that such remote wilderness as Masai Mara in Kenya, and you're literally camping at night and you can hear the lions around you and you can hear the wildlife and see them. It was the most remarkable experience. And I came home, and that was prior to starting my veterinary profession. And it was such a formidable experience for me that I will never forget it. And honestly, it drives me forward every single day of why we really need to protect this remarkable nature that we have. Because she and Mother Nature essentially supports us all to be able to live and breathe. And so unless we look after her, we'll be in trouble. And that's what our youth understand.
Yeah, definitely. Wow, I love that so much. That's such a beautiful story. thank you so much for taking the time to share your advice and your experiences with us and our listeners. So we want to end every podcast with like a little Q&A that showcases our very special speaker. So these are just some quick questions about you. So the first one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The first one is, what is your ultimate career goal?
My ultimate career goal is helping mobilize our vet industry to act as agents of change and really be able to use the incredible voice and education that we have to be able to make our world a better place. And we have the heart, we have the passion as a profession. We are inherently altruistic people that care for animals and care for nature. And that's my dream, that we really become leaders in sustainable change internationally.
Awesome. Thank you. So our second question is, do you have a quote or like a philosophy by any that you live by?
I have a couple of quotes that I live by. It's be the change that you want to see. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much one of the main ones I live by. And another one that, interestingly enough, I've had up in my room on a picture of a beautiful dog that I've actually had up on my room since before I started vet school. So it's been there for a very, very long time. It's be the person that your dog has always imagined or believes that you are.
That's so good. I love that. That really is what a veterinarian is to me.
Yeah. So funnily enough, my dog literally just walked behind me then. And, you know, I know he sees me as an absolute wonder and his best friend, an incredible companion, an incredible person. So if I can be even a tiny bit of that for others, then, you know, that's a dream come true.
Oh, I love it so much. So who continues to inspire you to continue to make a change?
In our profession, there's fortunately a number of local mentors that I really admire and I connect with on a close level. There's organizations that I really admire. So for example, I don't know if it's in the US, in North America, but I'd love to know the Who Gives a Crap toilet paper. Do you guys have that?
I have never heard of that. I can look right.
I definitely recommend everyone Who Gives a Crap toilet paper. So they're in the UK. They're an Australian brand. They're fantastic. And I hope for Annie Powell to be able to follow in their footsteps. So what they do is, instead of using new paper, toilet paper, which most similarly is what Annie Powell's doing in replacing virgin plastic with recycled plastic, instead of virgin toilet paper or new paper from trees, they're recycling paper and providing toilet paper made out of recycled paper or made out of bamboo. And 50% of their profits go to developing new sanitation and toiletries in third world countries so people can have clean and good toilet facilities, which help prevent a lot of disease in their areas. So again, that goes in the prevention category, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. So and they also have really cool toilet paper wrapping that's really colorful, and it says a funny quote on it about the environment, and it says the change that they're happening and how many trees they've saved. And I love their model, so that really inspires me. And then Leaders Wise, where we're really fortunate in New Zealand, we've got Jacinta Ardern, who really inspires me. She's the Prime Minister of New Zealand. She really inspires me from a female's perspective as a female leader. And she's very environmentally driven and has created a lot of change in New Zealand already. A lot of fantastic female leaders that are now leading the Scandinavian countries as well. And I definitely recommend young people, because when you see women like this saying what they're saying and doing what they're doing, it shows you a path forward that you can connect with, and it really is powerful.
That's awesome. So what is your hope for the veterinary industry when it comes to sustainability?
My hope is that we as a whole industry become leaders in this space. I hope that vet clinics, as I mentioned, have gardens around them or vertical gardens up on their roofs if they can't have a garden around them. I hope that there's beehives. I hope there's solar panels. I hope we become leaders and demonstrate in our clinics sustainable changes, and we're able to communicate that with our clients and our public on a larger level. And I think as a profession, we have such incredible capacity to do this. And honestly, I think in the next 10 to 20 years, we will be doing this.
Yeah, no, that of course. And I've been seeing a lot of people on social media, young people on social media, who definitely speak out on making changes and what they do every day. So there is hope there. It's really exciting.
It is. It's really exciting.
And so lastly, what is some advice you can give young people about starting a career in vet med?
Follow your passion. 100%. And I know you hear that a lot, but honestly, even if you don't see anyone else around you doing something that interests you, that does in no means does that mean don't pursue that space. It means go for it, research, use Google, use the research skills that you have developed through uni, through researching different platforms, different publishing areas, different studies, use scientific evidence. to be able to be the change that you believe in. And share it with your friends, and together just go for it. That's honestly, there's nothing holding us back. So it's honestly, you, what you can envisage, and even if it seems crazy, what you can envisage, you can create. And so let your imagination go wild.
Yeah, I like that you said that just because you can't see it doesn't mean you can't do it, because that just might mean that you're the first person, which is awesome. You created that opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then where can people find you? So social media, website, et cetera.
Absolutely. So love people to reach out to me on anniepowell.com.au. There's an area there, a contact form. Otherwise, you can reach out to me personally. Just shoot me an email at Steph, S-T-E-P-H, at Anniepowell, anniepowell.com.au. And sometimes I'm not the best with my emails. It takes me a couple of days, but I will get back to you. Definitely. Anniepowell Co. also has Facebook and Instagram. So definitely join the mission, and together we will do this.
Definitely. So thank you again, Dr. Stubbe. We really appreciate you being with us, and a big thank you to our Next Pod listeners. Remember, you are the future. So join us next month for another in-depth talk.